Welcome, welcome. When I think about hospitality, I think about a way to invest my life in other people. Because people will hear your doctrine and they'll hear the words that you say, but they'll watch your life much more closely to see if the doctrine fits the life. That's kind of how this goes. That's why the title is Hospitality with a Purpose. Because if it's just hospitality, then what you're doing is you're having cake with your friends and either believers or unbelievers and having a good time. But the point really is Christ.
For those of you coming in, there's handouts. I don't know if you see them. So you might try to get it.
And as we go along, I'll tell you which section we're in. There are numbers you can fill in on your outline. Sometime back, I would think about hospitality and just thought, oh, that's nice. We should all be hospitable. But there's an incredible scriptural background for hospitality, and let's go through a little bit about that. Number one, it's a command. In Romans 12:13, Paul, talking to the Romans, he commanded hospitality. In the Word of God, it says, be hospitable, practice hospitality. And then number two is that it's a requirement for church leadership. There are lists in the Bibles. If you want to be a leader in your church, there are lists in the Bible that mention what God requires. The funny thing is, practicing hospitality in A, 1 Timothy 3:2, and then B, Titus 1:8. Again, that's 1 Timothy 3:2 and Titus 1:8. Yeah, you have that on your list, I guess. Those are right along with the things like don't beat your wife, don't be an alcoholic. Those incredibly serious things. Hospitality goes right along with those incredibly important things that a believer who's a leader should have involved in his life. Also, number three, hospitality is what's required for widows to be on the church list. And that's the 1 Timothy 5:10. Back in the day, the disciples were in the new church, and they looked and realized the widows are being neglected. People need to make sure that these widows are taken care of. And so if a widow had a husband who passed away and she was going to be taken care of by the church, there were requirements for her to see what kind of a lifestyle she would have lived to be eligible to be on the list. And so hospitality was one of those requirements. So as you look through 1, 2, and 3, number 3, if you're expecting to ever fall on hard times and need help from the church, it's a biblical basis for hospitality needing to be a part of your life, to be known for that. And number 2, going backwards, if you want to be in any kind of church leadership, God expects you to be hospitable. And then number 1, if you want to be a believer, God commands that you be hospitable. So somewhere, whoever you are, I imagine that you're going to fit into that group some way or another. Now let's get to the big why. The big why is the same reason as everything else that we do. It's to glorify God. 1 Corinthians 10:31 says, so whether you eat or drink or whatever you're going to do, do it all for the glory of God. And hospitality really can work toward the glory of God.
Okay, there are two groups of people that we should work on being hospitable towards. And the first one is believers. 1 Peter 4:9 says to offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. So the one another is obviously going to be other believers. And the without grumbling, to me, though, is a bit of a challenge sometimes. Life is always busy. There are always more things to be done than there is time to do them. But the scripture wants us to look for opportunities to welcome other believers into our home and to be hospitable to them. And it wants us to do that without having a bad attitude or without complaining about it. Galatians 6:10 says that as we have opportunity to do good to all people, but especially believers, there's almost no better way to make somebody feel really loved and comfortable than to bring them into your home and love on them. Give them some good food and just kind of let them talk about whatever's on their mind. That's just a really good way to do that.
I'll add something to that. When being hospitable to believers, don't forget your pastor. I've had various pastors that were friends, and they've said things just quietly on the side, like, you know, when I first came here and people invited me over a couple of times, but since then, you know, I don't get invitations to come eat with people. I'm not in their houses unless there's a problem. And guys, that is a lonely, lonely job, being a pastor of a church. And it's a very, very busy job too. I think that people are maybe a little intimidated by the pastor, or afraid their house isn't clean enough, or that their child might do something, embarrass them or something along those lines. Or just knowing that he's so busy that they don't want to bother the pastor. Well, invite the pastor over. Even, you know, if you're a student, you're in an apartment, invite your pastor over. If he's really too busy, he can say, oh, I really appreciate that. It's kind of crazy right now. but I really appreciate that, and if I can get back with you sometime, maybe we can schedule that. Let him do that. Let him have that and put it in his court, because really that's a difficult thing sometimes to be a pastor, because people are a little bit intimidated to have him over.
Hebrews 10, 24, and 25, a lot of you are familiar with that passage. It talks about not giving up the habit of meeting together and encouraging each other. Usually when I think of those verses, I think about church, which I think is a very good application for those verses. But we can also meet with each other in our homes. That's a good place to encourage each other. The next two verses we have on your sheet, 3 John 1:8 and Romans 16:23, both refer to a man named Gaius. And in 3 John, John was complimenting him because he was being hospitable to ministers who were traveling to the different churches. And in Romans 16:23, Paul in that chapter is going through and kind of saying hi to a bunch of his friends in Rome. And sometimes he makes a little comment about the person as he says, "Say hi to so-and-so, my dear friend." When he got to this man, he said that he and the whole church had enjoyed his hospitality. And I think that that's really neat. A lot of the things that we do in ministry maybe aren't as enjoyable, but this is something that we can do, that we can enjoy, and that other people, it can bring joy to other people too.
The second group that we should be hospitable to is unbelievers. Do you guys remember a couple days ago when Dave Geisler was here and we watched the videos and he talked about that? How many times did he say, you know, it's a day-by-day thing, you can't do it all at one time. Day-by-day, moving people closer to Christ. He showed the videos because it was an excellent example, but he admitted, I really had to cram it in there. You know, I did so much as an example. In real life, this might take a long period of time. Remember Dave talking about things like that? He often said things like, you know, it's a relationship. Dave said, if you went and you used this this method of evangelism and just talked to someone and there was no follow-up, it might not do a tremendous amount of good because it has to have the relationships. And so hospitality is a fabulous way to build relationships and then work the gospel into it.
1 Peter 2:12 says, "Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us." We have to be intentional about living among the pagans, especially after you get out of college. It is so easy to be so busy with your job and your family and your church responsibilities that you have really no meaningful interaction with pagans, with people who don't have a personal relationship with Christ. But hospitality is a way that you can live among the pagans, or let them kind of be living among you, and so that they can see your good deeds. It's an opportunity for you to model Christ in front of them. And Luke 14, 12 through 14, I'm going to read those too. This is Jesus talking. "Then Jesus said to his host, 'When you give a luncheon or dinner, do not invite your friends, your brothers or relatives, or your rich neighbors. If you do, they may invite you back, and so you will be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed. Although they cannot repay you, you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous.'" If the scripture has asked us to offer hospitality to each other without grumbling, that indicates that sometimes that can be work. But if we're offering hospitality to people who are never going to have us over, they're not even capable of doing something back, that's even more work. And I think we can look at those verses not only as the physically lame and the physically blind, but also as the spiritually blind. The people that we're around that don't know Christ, they're spiritually blind and they're crippled and they're lame and they're hurting and their lives are a wreck. And having them into our home is a good way to love on them and model Christ.
Mark 2, 14 through 17, in my mind, explains the second thing, the second biggest reason that Jesus Christ was so hated by people in the church of his day. The first biggest reason is Jesus said that he was God, and that was totally unacceptable. The second biggest reason was that he was a friend of sinners. Boy, they hated that. Wow, they really hated him for that. In Mark 2, 14 through 17, Jesus called Levi, tax collector, and then he went to his house, and he ate with tax collectors and sinners. He hung out with them. He was there with them. Is there any way they would have invited him in if they didn't feel comfortable with him? If he wasn't going to sit there and eat their food and be their friend and talk to them? I just don't think there's much chance, unless he had the kind of compassionate attitude the kind of love that was obvious to them, that they felt safe with him. Be safe. Be safe. Make sure that you stand up for the Word of God. But then on gray issues, be kind and be a good friend. And if someone invites you over, then go to their house too. Because the Bible said, it's not the healthy people that need a doctor. It's the sick people that need a doctor. I heard a quote some years ago that when someone accepts Christ, within a few years, their level of friends that are unbelievers shrinks down to almost nothing. And if that's the way we live our lives, then the gospel isn't going to get out nearly so effectively. D on your list, 1 Peter 3:15 through 16. I'll read that. But in your hearts, set apart Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you, to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect. Again, the gentleness and respect, that marked the life of Christ. So the people allowed him into their homes and into their lives. If you're on campus and you're hanging out with your friends or at a job, and someone there that's not a believer has one of those burning questions that they really want to ask you. Guys, they might not ask you if their best buddies or someone from their sorority or house is standing right next to them. You know what I mean? Have you sensed that before? You think, wow, I wish someone wasn't standing right here because I could really share the gospel so easily now, but it might be too awkward with the situation. You guys have seen that? In your homes, if you invite somebody over to your dorm for a little bit or your apartment or after you're through with college, if you make your home an inviting place, people have questions. They're going to see your life. They know there's something different about you guys. And they're going to want to talk to you about it. But it's just too much to be standing in, you know, Kate Cafe or something like that and expect them to really open their heart. Your home is a wonderful place to be able to do that. Methods of hospitality is the next section. And we'll go through those. This is the practical stuff. We try to be as absolutely practical as possible. Number one, dinner or dessert. Have people over. Invite them over for dinner or for dessert. And this is so important. Ask what they like and what they don't like. I was once invited over to a friend's house. She was recently married to another friend of mine. And they didn't ask really what I liked to eat. And I didn't even notice it until I got there. And I'll tell you, tuna fish is okay. I can eat tuna fish. Tomatoes, I despise. I don't like tomatoes in any shape or form. Well, what I was served was a delicacy, I'm sure, to someone. It was one of the largest tomatoes I'd seen in my life. It must have come from a specialty store. And my sweet hostess had taken a serrated knife and she cut the top off the tomato and pulled it out and mixed the insides up and poured tuna fish in it. And then she put some lettuce and put the little tomato hat back on. You know? I believe there is such a thing as reverse hospitality, and I ate every bite. You know? But I bet it would have been an easier conversation and we would have had a more relaxing time if I'd been able to have a hamburger or something, you know? So check. You know, some people love sour cream and some people will run screaming from your home if you put sour cream on stuff. And you can't know unless you ask. You know, ask about allergies or if they're like anything or not. And I think that's major. It shows respect and it keeps it from being awkward when people get there.
Okay, there are two types of dinner or dessert kind of hospitality that we're going to talk about. First of all, is formal. This is where you make it a really special occasion. You get out the candles or your fancy dishes, maybe a holiday dinner or something. This kind of thing can be really fun and really special. I think it's less and less useful because our culture is becoming more and more casual, especially if we're reaching out to people that we don't know very well. Most people are more comfortable in less formal settings, but sometimes it can be, you know, again, if there's a holiday affiliated with it, or sometimes there's a special occasion where it can be a fun tool. We recently got to do this. Norman has a daddy-daughter dance that Chris and Anna went to, and another friend of ours and his daughter, and then a neighbor and his daughter, they were going to all go together. And so we had all the dads and their little girls over, and we had, you know, soft music playing and candles and little china with their little cookies on it or whatever. And the girls were all dressed up, and they just felt really special, and it was kind of humorous for the dads. And so sometimes you can do stuff like that. More often, though, is I think B is informal settings. where maybe you have somebody over and grill out in the backyard. I think that's especially useful if you're trying to reach out to neighbors. They might not even feel comfortable coming all the way into your home in the early stages of a relationship, but they might walk on over to the backyard. Guys especially, you know, they're comfortable around the grill. It gives them something to do, makes them feel kind of manly. I think that can be fun. With believers, just saying, hey, come over after church and we'll have pancakes. It's cheap, it's fast, you don't have to have prepared anything. And I think sometimes you can spontaneously have someone over that you don't know well more easily than calling and saying, can you come over Friday night at 6 o'clock for dinner? If they're just in your house and it's getting close to lunchtime, you can say, hey, how about a grilled cheese sandwich? And there's not much pressure there, but it gives you more opportunity to visit and relax over a meal. Another thing some girls in the dorms told me that they did last year on move-in day was they got some vegetable trays and some snacks and foods and soda and stuff like that, and they had it in their room with the door open with, I don't know if they had posters or if they just kind of spread the word among the girls moving into their floor that, hey, come over to our room and take a break. And so parents came over, students came over, and it gave them a chance to introduce themselves and get to know people. And again, it was informal. It's just, hey, I'm doing something nice for you, and it was really comfortable.
Be spontaneous, but plan your spontaneity in detail in advance. Okay? I'm kind of joking, but here's what I mean by that. You can almost always find a frozen pizza in my icebox. Not because I love frozen pizza, but because it's there. So if someone shows up or I'm doing something with somebody, I know if we drop back by the house, I can whip that thing in, you know, cut up some extra stuff and throw it on top so it's not too nasty. And there'll be something there, because if you're worried about whether you have something to feed somebody, you're going to be nervous about bringing them back. You think, oh man, what in the world am I going to find to feed this person? And so we have these, you know, emergency food supplies tucked away because it allows for spontaneity. So just plan. What do I need to do to be spontaneous, you know, later? My wife and I, at one time, we had kind of a rule where we tried to keep the house within a certain number of minutes show ready, you know? Now, that's harder with children, so if you drop in now, it might be different. But what we did was we decided, okay, the house can get this messy either because we were studying or the newspaper, you know, whatever can get messy. But if we were like 5 or 7 minutes away from not being horrified that someone came in, then someone calls, you can say, hey, come on over. We'll have some ice cream or something. Then you can get the house or your apartment or your dorm ready enough that you're not embarrassed. Because if you're embarrassed, they're going to know. People know when you're uncomfortable. So plan things a little bit in advance on how to be spontaneous. There's a great quote I just love. I heard it some years ago. I wish I could remember who it was so I could give them good credit. But the quote is, life is about allowing the kind of interruptions that Jesus did. How about that? Life is about allowing the kind of interruptions that Jesus did. Read the New Testament. Read the Gospels. How many times does it say that he was going somewhere along the road and then they stopped him? Or he was eating a meal and then they came in? Or they invited him over and fixed him a meal? How often did Jesus, he had a plan, he was going somewhere, and his plans got totally out the window and he ended up serving people? Be like that. Be spontaneous.
Sometimes when you're having somebody over and they offer to bring something, let them. Sometimes maybe you've got maybe another believer or a non-believer, whatever, that's just totally at the end of their rope and they're barely functioning, and so you're having them over to love on them, then sometimes the nicest thing to do is say, no, I've got it covered. You just come over and let me take care of you. But sometimes the nicest thing to do is say, yeah, why don't you bring the dessert or you bring a salad? Because then they've got something in their hands and they feel like they're contributing. They don't feel as much like they owe you something. So sometimes that can make them more comfortable. Also, just when they're at your house and there's those minutes of last-minute preparation, and they say, is there anything I can do to help? Sometimes the nicest thing you can do is say, yeah, why don't you put the ice in the glasses? Or could you set this on the table for me? Because, again, it gives them something to do with their hands. Sometimes, especially in those early minutes of time with somebody, when somebody's come over and you haven't really broken the ice yet, it can be a little awkward. So letting them help sometimes can really be the best way to be kind.
The second method of hospitality is events. This is important because in our culture, it is less and less common for people to come to your home or your apartment for dinner. When I was a little kid, we had people over all the time. I mean, that was what we did. I mean, people just drop in and we'd go eat at their house, they'd come eat at our house. It was very, very common. A generation before that, it was very common to have people come over. And you could say, hey, next Tuesday night, come on over and we'll, you know, we'll grill out or we'll have something to eat. Guys, it's just not that way anymore. If you do that now and invite some over for next Tuesday night, they're going to have a week or 3 or 4 days to think, okay, what's up? You know, what's the deal? Did my kid break their window? Did my dog bite them? Are they mad at me?
Are they selling Amway?
Are they selling Amway? Really?
No.
We're not fooling. The culture has changed so much that if you do invite people over much in advance for dinner, it might be weird. It might be awkward for them. So events are great. Things like sports on TV. Guys, you can go up to a guy you hardly know at all and say, hey, we're getting together for a Super Bowl party. You want to come hang out? And he might do it. If you invite some guy like that over for dinner, you're going to scare him to death. You know, he's not going to come. Tournaments on TV, study groups, study party at your house, group projects. Group projects are great. It's your professor forcing someone into your apartment or your dorm. Isn't that beautiful? He has no idea he's helping with gospel, does he? Also, if your home is just too scary, you can just tell that there are barriers up on that. Go bowling. Go out for ice cream. Or if you're going out and doing something that you've got to do, say, hey, let's stop by Brahms on the way back and get something. And people are like, oh, great. And they'll do it. One thing, too, and this is just bizarre. I've got a real good friend, and a couple years ago, I invited him and his wife over for dinner, and they said, oh, yeah, great. Well, do you want us to pick up a video or get one of ours, or, you know, what kind of a tape you want to watch? I said, no, that's okay. I said, well, we can just talk and stuff. And they said, oh, it was the slow oh. And they get the slow blink. Oh. You've seen the slow blink. Well, they got there, and we ate our meal, and we were talking, kind of, we sat in the living room, and we chatted for a little bit. And then, about halfway through, he said, funny thing, this is the first time that we've ever gone to someone's house and just talked. He said, we always watch a video, we always rent a movie or something. And he said, we were scared to death to come over here. We thought, what in the world are we going to talk to him about? Guys, this has been my friend since about 4 years old, you know, and I know the guy. And we're buddies. We eat lunch together. And he was afraid to bring his wife to my house because I didn't know what to say. You know? That means you've really got to carry the ball and recognize culture's different and they might not know what to do. And so pick a few things in advance to talk about and be chatty with people. Also, parties, number three. Parties are great because people can be comfortable. You're a lot more likely to be able to share Christ with someone in a casual conversation at a party when someone's chatting with you a little bit than just walking up to them and saying, has there ever been a time in your life when you accepted Jesus Christ as your Savior? And if you went to heaven and God asked you, I should let you in, what would you say? You know? I mean, have you guys heard that? That is a great way to ask people where they are with Christ. But if you just walk right up and say that to someone, they might be nervous. But if they're in your home and you're just talking about stuff, it can come out really naturally at a party. You have kids sometime, invite kids over to play. If your kid has a birthday party, invite them to come. And then the parents who bring their kids over say, hey, why don't you stay? You know, and they will stay. And then while the kids are, you know, eating cake, you can then really talk about important things. 4th of July, neighborhood block parties. For believers, Sunday school parties, have them into your home, family events, things of that nature. Because people are a lot more likely to hear who you really are in Christ when they're comfortable. Laurie does scrapbooking and things like that.
Another thing that we've done is I've had what I called craft night, or a lot of women will do a regularly scheduled scrapbooking night. Something, again, it gives people something to do with their hands, but you can visit while you're doing it and you can get to know people. I think that sometimes this is a good opportunity to mix some of your non-Christian friends and your Christian friends. Get your non-Christian friends a little bit comfortable around some other believers. Get some help with the people that Christ has put on your heart that you're trying to reach out to. You know, sometimes we can bring a person this far, but then sometimes God will bring another Christian into their life that is able to take the next step. But I would caution you on that. If you have Christian friends who have not developed a compassion for the lost or an ability to be sensitive to people who are not living godly lives, then a person like that might not be the best person to invite over the same time you invite your friend who cusses like a sailor. You know, it could get ugly. So think through the mixes that you invite. But I think sometimes things like that can be fun things to do, and it can give you opportunities to build relationships. Number 4 are overnight guests. think sometimes this is the obvious thing we think of when we think of hospitality. You know, when you've got friends coming in and out of town. I know a lot of times those of you in the dorms, when people of the opposite sex have relatives or friends that come in town, you'll let them stay in your room. Or high school students that are thinking about coming to OU, you guys let them stay in their room. Also, just as you get apartments and houses, just family when they're in town or friends, you can just get into some such good conversation sometimes when there's not a two-hour time limit and dinner's over and you feel like you got to go. Missionaries that are in town, a lot of times they need a place to stay. You know, when you have kids someday, letting their friends come into your home and be a part of your home and stay overnight, it gives those children an opportunity to see what a Christian home is like, and really gives you an opportunity to build relationships with them.
And here's a free for nothing. I was a lawyer for 8 years and just saw a lot of things in the world of little kids. When you guys have kids, be careful where you let your kids spend the night with people. Invite kids into your home freely. Be careful where you let your kids go. You know, check up enough to know whether it's safe, and give it some time before you let your kids spend the night, just as a safety reason.
Another thing, make people comfortable. This is especially important if they're going to be stuck with you overnight. But think through ways you can make people comfortable. Tell them where the towels are and how to work the shower. Let them know they can get in your fridge or your pantry if that doesn't bother you too much. Give them as much personal space as possible. You don't want to ask your guests to share a room with your kid. You know, breakfast sometimes can be a way to really make people feel special. For not a lot of money and not a whole lot of time, you can make a breakfast that seems kind of fancy. But also, you can just get the cereal boxes out on the counter the night before and some bagels and the toaster and the coffee pot, so that if they're getting up at a different time than you, they can help themselves. One idea that I've heard people do is getting a little basket that you keep in your house somewhere that you can just get out on the bathroom counter when people are staying, that has extra toothbrushes, razors, toothpaste, things that people might have forgotten but they might be kind of embarrassed to ask you for, that could just be easily accessible for them. And think through enough to prepare enough so that you're able to be kind by making people feel comfortable. But on the other hand, don't wait until you feel like you've got everything so perfect that Southern Living could come through and take their pictures for their next story. Don't wait for that, because that probably isn't ever going to happen. But even if it does, that may be down the line. Just take the steps to make people feel comfortable, but don't wait until things are perfect.
Number 5, more overt ministries in your home. By that I mean dorm Bible study in your apartment, small groups from church in your home. If you want to do a fun Bible study, get a concordance and look up Aquila and Priscilla and read how many different cities were those guys in. And they were all over everywhere. And it was, hey, say hello to the church that meets in your home. Look and see how many mighty men of God lived with them, you know? And they had a huge impact, I think, on Paul and Apollos and others too. And, you know, I had a dorm Bible study when I was in college, and people were comfortable in my dorm having a formal time. But then when the formal time's over, people might just stay and hang out, and then that's where some real meat can really come into.
Again, I know most of you guys don't have kids yet, but one of these days, most of you will. And so some of the things that we're sharing, we're just kind of hoping you'll tuck up in your head somewhere and use whenever you get to the next stage of life. Another thing that we've done that has really helped a lot with building relationships and giving us opportunities to directly communicate the gospel is children's parties. We've had Easter egg hunts, neighborhood Easter egg hunts, where, you know, every kid loves an Easter egg hunt. You stick, and again, you hype up the candy, you got lots of candy in those eggs. But then also we included in the hunt, I don't know if any of you are familiar with the resurrection eggs that Family Life uses, but basically they tell the gospel story. And so the kids who found those special eggs, they got some special piece of candy. But then we sat down and went through those series of little eggs and had a chance to share the gospel with the children that came to the Easter egg hunt. And again, a lot of their parents are standing around in the back also listening. But because it's a holiday, because most people, especially in the central part of the country, I don't know so much about the coast, but when it's a holiday, they're a little more used to people talking about religious things. They're a little more comfortable. Gave us a chance to get through the gospel. We also did a Christmas pageant one time, where we got a bunch of neighborhood kids together and had several rehearsals where, you know, we stuck the towels on the heads and all that kind of stuff, got the sticks for the staffs, and had little bitty kids crawling around like sheep. And
save your old bathrobes.
Yeah, don't get rid of bathrobes. Save those. But so for the practices, we had the children alone. And so we were able to be very direct in communicating the gospel to those children, explaining to them what the meaning of Christmas was. But then we put on a Christmas pageant for their parents. And you know, it's just in the living room, very informal, but every parent loves to see their kid, you know, doing something on the stage, even if it's just your living room. And so then we were able to include the parents in that. I've known people that have done birthday parties for Jesus. Another thing that can be useful if you've got relationships with neighbors, especially in your kids' friends from school, Child Evangelism Fellowship runs backyard Bible clubs. And it's kind of like doing a little miniature vacation Bible school in your backyard. There may be people that wouldn't be comfortable letting you take their children all the way to your church, but they might be willing to let them come hang out in your backyard a few days, one week in the summer. You can do fun stuff, do crafts, and then you can also get to tell them about Jesus. Just a suggestion, if God leads you to do some of these kinds of evangelistic events with neighbors and people like that, pray that he'd give you a friend to do that with. I think so many times that can help so much if you have another believer that you can pray with, that can help you be alert and be sensitive to how to be kind to people and just physically to help with the preparations and things. But again, be sensitive to Christian, non-Christian balances. If you're going to have people over into your home for a Bible study, you may not want 10 Christians and your one non-Christian friend. And if you do have situations like that, just make sure that you're not spending all your time talking about what you just did at church last night and not being sensitive to the fact that the non-Christian you've invited may not have anything to add to that conversation. But make sure you just help just have that be kind thought in your mind of thinking through how can I really be loving to this person that I've brought into my home. The next section, making your home attractive to people. And I don't mean, ooh, look at that pretty house. I mean attractive like a magnet, like making your home a place that people want to be there. We've talked about this a little bit. The first thing is food. Everybody loves food. Food is a great way to love on people. It's a great way to make people feel comfortable. And it's a great way for you to feel like you're doing something nice for people. So it gives you something to do, too, so that you're comfortable. Because, again, the more comfortable you are, the easier it is for you to make other people feel comfortable. Snacks on hand, coffee. We don't drink coffee. We have two coffee pots. There are some people that coffee is really important to. A lot of times we try to keep soda in the house, even if we're not drinking it, because that's something that a lot of people like to have. For kids, we've had popsicles, those cheap ones in the little tubes, the Popeyes. You can keep those around. Another thing that I found is useful is sometimes making cookie dough and having it just already in the freezer, and you can just cut off a little bit or have it frozen in little clumps and throw it in the oven, and you've got fresh baked cookies, and it seems like you're just being so hospitable to people with very, very little effort. For those of you in the dorms, if you've got a friend with an apartment or staff or somebody, you can come over and borrow their kitchen. You know, you can make up some cookies. Probably a lot of people will be glad to let you keep even already made cookies in the freezer and just come by when you're over at their house and grab another bag out of the freezer and then just have them in your room for people. I think you're next.
Number two. Ladies, write this down. Guys, write it in all caps. Cleanliness. When my wife and I were first married, I thought I was going to be the superhero, and while she was studying or doing something, I snuck into the kitchen and I cleaned it. And then I came out with my chest puffed up and I said, I've cleaned the kitchen. Because for a guy, you know, you do something small and then you're the hero. And then Laurie came in and she looked and she was very sweet, but she looked around and she said, well, thank you, honey. What did you do? Because I'm a guy. I don't see crumbs. I just reorganize when I clean. You know what I... Yeah, the ladies laughed more than the guys did on that one, by the way. But have your house clean enough that it won't bother people and they'll feel comfortable. Don't make it so clean that it's going to make people nervous. I'll give an example. Laurie will give an example. My example is I know someone about your age who went to someone's home, very frugal, and I'm okay with frugal. And they use paper plates. I'm okay with that, too. But they reuse their paper plates. Right. So when you come to the pile of paper plates, you kind of have to deal them like cards and look to see which one has this grease stain or, you know, the little fingerprints on them from eating Cheetos. You know what I mean? Yeah, that's nasty. Don't do that. You know, be a little cleaner than that. Laurie, give your example.
There was a family that my family used to go visit when I was growing up, and they were very clean and had very nice things and wanted to keep them nice. And so every bedroom and every bathroom had a trash can that coordinated with the bedding or the decor in the bathroom. We were not allowed to put trash in those trash cans because then they wouldn't look very pretty anymore or get them dirty. They had a white couch. We were not allowed to sit on the white couch because, you know, the oil from our skin or whatever we had on our hands or whatever, it would ruin their couch. That was not a comfortable place to be. Having to go, it was a real long ranch-style house, having to go from here all the way to the very end of their house, around the corner, into the utility room to throw a piece of, you know, paper away or something, was just not hospitable. Also, on the cleanliness thing, I think that most moms, most wives that I've been in their home, whose houses are always impeccable, those are not fun places to be. The mothers are usually snapping at everyone all the time. They're usually very uptight and very stressed, and it is not a place that makes you feel comfortable. If you are a person who is a total slob, in order to be hospitable, work on straightening things up a little bit. If things are really a wreck or really gross in the kitchen, then, or in the bathroom, people are not going to be comfortable. And if your purpose is to love them so that you can share Christ with them or encourage other believers, they're not going to want to be in your home. They're not going to hear what you have to say if they're uncomfortable. If you're on the other extreme and you're a neat freak, pray that God will help you pull that in enough to care more about people than you do about what your house looks like. More about people than whether or not your stuff gets messed up. I think finding just kind of a moderate balance, and for different people, I've got one friend, she's probably better than anyone I know at being hospitable and just loving on people. You come in her house and she can take a ho-ho and make you feel like you've had a gourmet dessert. You know, she can cut it all up on a pretty little plate and sprinkle powdered sugar on it with a fancy little teacup and just love on you and make you feel so special. But there's usually a huge pile of dishes in the sink, and there's usually laundry that needs to be folded. The house is usually a bit messy, but she is totally zoned in on loving you. And things are okay enough that you forget about the dishes, and you forget about the pile of laundry on the couch because you're feeling so loved. Now, some of us are never going to be comfortable enough to love on people if our sink is like this with dishes and we've got a pile of laundry on the couch. So, you know, we may have to clean it up a little bit more than that. But so find your balance. Find the balance that makes other people most comfortable and that makes you comfortable enough to love on people.
Know your strengths in cleaning too. Laurie can micro-clean things and have them great. I can vacuum the entire house in about 3.5 minutes, you know? Because I'm a man. I take pride in racing through the house that I can, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. And so know that. When you have kids too, and when guys, gals, when you're married, make sure that you work as a team and help on that too. And guys, little kids can destroy an entire house in about 4 seconds flat. And they spew little fluids and Cheerios all over everywhere. And so maybe you're having someone come over and you've been at work and you come home and the house looks like it did when you left and you think, man, it's 2 hours and, you know, we have to get things ready. Well, then jump in there and get on it, because little kids can really slow stuff up. And when you're first married, then you can divide stuff up and who does what. So I love to cook breakfast. I'm the breakfast guy. And figure out what you're good at and what you like to do, and then help out with that. And then just be understanding of helping out with stuff, especially if there are small children around. If there are very large pets, again, here's a free for nothing that I'll throw in. If you have a 150-pound hairy dog that jumps up on people and runs around, that makes your house not quite as hospitable. If you have 9 cats in your house and 1 very small litter box, God has a way of protecting you that after a while your nose shuts off to that. I'm not fooling. You guys know what I'm talking about? You don't smell 9 cats anymore. Well, that's a gift from God. But your friend from work or from the dorms or someone coming over, they can. And I love animals. My house would be a zoo if I really wanted it to be, but, and I would kind of like it to be, but be careful with animals and things like that. And with children, make sure, guys, that you help out. And ladies, be understanding of guys, because, again, we can clean and be, you know, thumping chest proud of it and that not be quite up to your standards. So, guys, make sure you help, and ladies, just realize that we weren't maybe trained that way or just not our natural thing.
Number 3 is decor. You want to work toward making your home aesthetically pleasing and homey. You know, you can do little things, music playing, candles, that helps with the cat smell. But pay attention to whom you're ministering to. You know, Paul talked about he became like everyone for the sake of the gospel. If I am trying to reach out to some single moms or to people who just really don't have much stuff, ooh, watch out what it is that you're offering them. Don't offer things that are so fancy that they're going to feel uncomfortable or stressed. Be sensitive. Think through what you can do that is the most kind. On the flip side, if you are a millionaire and you have millionaire friends, check out the trends enough that you can not have your home be distracting to them. If that is where their focus is and it's all that they think is important, even though you know that that's not what's most important, have enough stuff in your house or have your house look nice enough that they won't just be totally distracted by the fact that you don't have anything around that they think is important. Kind of a little side note, if God gives you a lot of money someday and you are choosing the home that you buy, I would caution you to be very, very careful. If God gives you a lot of money, it may be that the best thing for you to do is to have a large home with a lot of square feet so that you can have a lot of people in it comfortably. However, if you have a home that is very grand and very the kind that you walk up and go, most people are not comfortable there. I have watched so many people walk into a home and just totally close up emotionally because they are so stressed, because they're just thinking, oh, I'm so embarrassed, or, you know, the men feel like I'm such a failure, I can't live up to this. We know that that's not what is important. We know that a house size is not, it doesn't have eternal value. We know that. But most, especially Americans, struggle with contentment in those issues. So if God gives you a lot of money, be really careful in selecting your home that it truly is a place to be hospitable and that it really is the best fit. You know, it may be if you get a big house, you can get one that doesn't look big, that still has a comfortable, calm, you know, doesn't make people go whenever they walk up. On the flip side, if you have a very, very small house or a house that's not very nice, don't feel like you can't love on people in that home, because you can. Keep it clean, do a few little things to try to make it look homey, and then people are going to be so happy to be loved there. You know, you may have some exceptions, but for the most part, people will be happy to be there. We have some friends that were having a going away party, and so they had their going away party at a huge mansion. Very, very, very large house so that it could accommodate the people was the thought process. Landscaped backyard with the patios and the pool, just like on TV, and lots of living areas, basement, you know, people could mill and mingle everywhere. And you know that entire crowd stayed in one living room that's the size of a living room in an average house? Because people like to be together. So don't feel like, oh, my house is too small, I can't have anyone over. Because usually people kind of like, it just kind of adds energy when everybody's close and, you know, physically and all kind of crowded in there. So just use whatever God gives you, but think through how to use it really best to glorify God.
Also, people do like to get in small spaces. This is not the next point yet I'm adding to Laurie's point. People do like to get in small spaces and talk and chat. Guys, if the ladies are preparing meals, don't eight of you stand in the kitchen. You know, because quietly, they'll be stressed at you. Because if they're trying to open up the oven and move things around, and you're in there talking sports and stuff, you might get kind of in the way. So grab the guys and head to the living room or something. Number four, kids, children, make your house kid-friendly. You guys might have nieces and nephews or friends with kids. And if your home isn't kid-friendly, people will not be comfortable. Because if someone's always worried that their child is going to break something or fall and get hurt or do something along, you know, those lines, then they're not going to be comfortable and they won't talk to you because they're always going to be chasing the little one around. I don't really know the purpose. I'm a guy. I don't know what the purpose of a doily is. What are those things? You know, or table runners. They're like little handles for kids to do the magician's trick. You know? And ladies like to put their most precious things that are dear to their hearts on these little doilies that reach right down where the little kids can whip them off, you know? I was at a home, and every table was smaller than waist high, and it had every kind of crystal, glass, everything that was precious was there with a little hanging down doily. And I had a 2-year-old boy who could run like the wind. And I thought, if my son doesn't break all their things, I probably am going to. Have I been in your apartments? And so it was stressful. And we really, Laurie and I, we couldn't concentrate very much because we were so afraid. And when he did bump into something and it tottered, their cake topper from their wedding, it did the tilting thing and leaned over and all the air sucked out of the room because the wife just about passed smooth out. And by the grace of God, it righted itself. It's one of those angel things. If you make your home friendly for children, maybe like nothing else, that will help bring the parents in. If those parents see that their kids tracked mud in your house one time, you didn't chew them out, or that you like their kids, they'll feel comfortable with you. And then all of a sudden, this neighbor maybe that you don't even know very well, they feel comfortable with you because their kids tell them everything about every story you told and everything in your house. And they're going to feel like they know you. They're going to feel comfortable with you if their kids feel comfortable with you. Having kids in your house is a fantastic door to the parents because the parents are going to feel loved. Lastly, in that section...
I'm going to add a real quick note. If you have kids someday and you have one of those little high chair booster seats or booster seat or something, don't get rid of it. Just keep it in the garage so that when somebody comes over with a little kid, you can have a place for the kid to sit at the table with the rest of you. If you're at a garage sale, you see one for 50 cents, at the end of the day they're clearing it out and you've got a place to put it, just get it, stick it in the closet. You know, keep a couple balls around or just a couple of things so that if you're trying to love on somebody who has children, you're able to pull out some toys or something out of the closet to help make that a more comfortable situation.
Also, one of the main things that can wreck your home and make it a non-hospitable place is if you have ratty, bratty children. I can say that because you don't have kids now. See, I've got such freedom here. I feel wonderful. There are a lot of books on the market about raising children. Start noticing guys, aunts, uncles, cousins, friends of yours that have kids and see their kids and you think, man, those kids are really pretty good kids. Go talk to them and say, hey, why are your kids so nice? What do you do? And pick up on that, because you've been in a home where the little kid's screaming the whole time and crying and pulling on stuff and punching his sister. And the parents are going to be stressed. You're going to be stressed. If there are kids in the home, that is not a happy place if the kids aren't happy. So start early with little kids and just pray that God will help you be just excellent parents, because it's very difficult to be loving and hospitable to people if the children aren't under control.
People that we want to reach out to, but God knows them. He knows what is interesting to them, and so pray that He will give you insight on how to love them and creative ways that you can be hospitable to them. Number two, choose the person or people you live with very carefully. If you choose a roommate in your dorms or roommates in your apartment who do not have the same vision for hospitality you have, then it will not work. Because if they are grumbling and grumpy or irritated that you've got somebody in there, then that's not going to be a comfortable place to have people. You're not going to be able to do it. And even more importantly, choose the person you marry very carefully. Because you choose a bad roommate, you're stuck with them for a semester or a year. You don't choose your spouse well, and that is a lifelong hindrance to ministry. Make sure that you have the same vision for hospitality as the person that you marry.
Number three, take initiative. You guys are the leaders. I mean, you're here. You're giving your spring break to come to a conference with multiple hours of taking notes. And you guys are the ones who are really doing the stuff and doing the ministry. Not everyone is like that. How many times already have you guys, you've invited someone over, maybe they come, maybe they don't. You invite them over again, maybe they come, maybe they don't. And you realize they never call you back. Is that right? Are you guys always the ones? Are you the ones that call and you're going to get together and you've got to pick the place, you've got to make the calls? That's the way it is in real life. It gets worse after college, I think. Get thick-skinned. Get thick-skinned and keep on keeping on. Watch for social clues to make sure you're not bugging anybody. But Laurie and I, we've invited people over numerous times and they just wouldn't show up. Or something would happen and they'd blow us off. And we'd think, well, what's the deal here? Or they wouldn't call us back. And then eventually they come over and have a wonderful time and feel like that we love them because we've invited them over and we're embarrassed they didn't come before. But you just kind of have to keep after it and realize that you might have to be the one to do it. Also, we had a family that we weren't always able to help them. We were busy, busy, busy with our lives. And just a family in the church would have us over for meals or would send meals to us. So you can encourage believers by looking around and finding a believer that's just exhausted. Have them over. Don't expect them to be repaid.
Number four, learn to be a conversationalist. It is so important that you are able to make other people feel comfortable. If you get them so far as to get them in your home and then you just stare at each other because no one has anything to say, that can be very awkward and not conducive to ministry. If you are not naturally a conversationalist, if you didn't grow up in a home where people did had a lot of conversations and it's not your natural gift, work on it. Pray that God will help you learn how to ask good questions. Read books on how to ask good questions. If you have to, if you're an organized person, memorize a list of different topics you could go down. Don't tell them that. But have a plan, if that is not natural for you, on how you can make someone else comfortable. Develop varied interests. Find out what they're interested in and ask them questions about it.
Number five is obvious. Learn and practice manners. I was at a home recently where there was a belching contest, and it just wasn't cool. At the chug, it's okay, but not in your home.
Number six, especially ladies, read magazines and get ideas on menus and decor. Again, be careful that it doesn't cause you problems with contentment. And again, don't wait until your house looks just like the magazine to be hospitable. But it's a good idea to just get some ideas from other places.
Number seven, consider money spent on hospitality as your offering to an almighty God who loves you and loves your friends and neighbors. It's not a small thing. It's expensive being hospitable. I'm not saying you should shortchange your local church, because I don't mean that. What I mean is have an attitude of you're buying extra stuff for your home, you're buying extra food. That is an offering to God because you're being purposeful.
Number eight, leave time in your schedule to be hospitable. It takes a lot of time to be hospitable. The planning, the calling, the shopping, the hosting, the cleanup afterwards, it's time consuming. And if your schedule is so full of so many things, then there will not be room to have people in it in such a way that you can be making them feel comfortable and loving on them. But it's really important that you have time for that. You can't always know when somebody is going to have that look in their eyes that says, I really need to talk. And of course, we have to have things in our lives that are on our schedules, that are on our routines. But just try to, you know, Dick wasn't able to do this seminar today because he's sick, but some of you may have gone to it last time about margins. Try to leave enough margins in your life for people so that you can have a little wiggle room, so that you can have people into your home and let them in.
In closing, I'm going to try to tie it all together back to the beginning. What we're trying to say is there's a purpose here. I don't entertain and have people around because that's so much fun for me, although I do enjoy that. But it's ministry, it's hospitality with a purpose. It all comes back to Christ. Because there are people in this world that will never, never step foot in a church because they feel like they need to get up early on a Sunday morning and get dressed up. There are people that aren't going to tune in some TV station and try to find some pastor. But they might be your friend. They might be in the dorm or in the apartments. They might be a coworker. And hospitality can draw them to Christ. When they see your life, they're going to wonder, what's different with you? Always be prepared to give an answer for the hope that you have. When someone says, boy, you seem so happy. Have you guys heard people say things like that? You seem so happy. Man, don't let that go. Have hospitality with a purpose. Tell them why you're happy. Invite them into your home and share your life with them. Again, 1 Corinthians 10:31 says, so whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. We're toward the end on time. Do you want to take questions, Lori Lindsay? Anybody have any quick questions before the other groups break? Yeah.
How do you take somebody out?
There are two ways. One, you just say, oh boy, we better break it off. I got a doctor's appointment. I better get out of here. And then gather your stuff and go. Or if they are hanging on to you and they will not leave, just say, hey, come with me while I gather my stuff. Come on over here while I do this. And then take them with you. Then get your coat, get your thing, and then say, hey, follow me out here. And then talk about the next time. you know, maybe this next week we can get together. Tuesday's pretty open for me. As you're going out the door, don't grab him by the neck. But if you move, it might be a little offensive, but you have to go to your doctor's appointment. Make sure you follow up verbally that you had a good time and that you're ready for the next time. Dan? We plan it. I don't think we have a written budget, but we plan it. We bought a croquet set on purpose so that our neighbors would have something to do to hit a ball around the yard. They might not come in your house, so it might be uncomfortable, but they'll hit a croquet ball around your front yard or your side yard. We also bought one of those big Sam's built-together yard gymnastic things for kids with a slide and swings and all that kind of stuff. You know those things? We bought that not because I think my kids need some big, huge thing in the backyard, but because other kids would come. I didn't have a big fence, so other children from the entire neighborhood would come over. I dug a big pit in the ground and filled it full of soft mulch and put railroad ties around it. It was a tremendous amount of work. It took a long time. But our yard was the place to be. And so, yeah, we spent a lot of money on things like that, and just that was our plan.
I think there's not a way to define it because it's an attitude of the heart, that you just have to pray that God will help you be honest with yourself about and what your motive is, and that then if you choose to purchase something, you know, there have been times that it really didn't make sense, the things that we got, because they were expensive, but they were very intentional, and it was definitely a choice because we knew that that would be something that would be attractive to someone we were trying to reach out to. So just pray about it and pray that you'll be honest with yourself.
Yeah. When they break stuff is different for me usually than discipline. When they break stuff and it's just mostly an accident, I just say, hey man, it's okay. I love you a whole lot better than I love that, whatever it is. You're more important to me than that. Man, that kid will love you for the rest of his life. He'll tell his grandkids about you, really. You know? Also, we had a rule. It was kind of a, hey, not in my house, buddy. Not in my yard. You're going to be kind to him. I'm not going to let him talk that way about you, and you're not going to talk that way about him. We're not going to rag on people in my place. This is a safe place. How many times have I said that? A million times. This is a safe place. You say that a little bit, and then kids are going to know. And then you know what happens? You do that for a little bit, and then someone else uses a little bit of bad language, or they say something mean, and the other kid's like, hey, man, this is a safe place. You know? We don't talk like that here. You know?
Sometimes I would just get down on their little faces, and I would say, I love you, and I am so glad that you have come to my house today, but you may not act like that at my house. Mm-hmm. We do not act like that at our house. Or you must do what I say when you're at my house. You know, so very kindly, lots of love, lots of I love you, and I'm so glad you're here, but very firm, this is not the way we act here.
With teenagers, you can do it different. I teed one guy up one time, you know, and you're out of here. You know, I gave him the big technical, and you cross the line, you're out of here. And it just threw him right out of the house. He's a teenager, and we loved each other, and it was okay. Was there one? Yeah.
I found myself living with a couple non-believers, and yet I want to be able to be hospitable. How do I make them comfortable with my hospitality?
You might not be able to. That's the short, truthful answer. Do the best you can and realize you have to be hospitable to your roommates too. Classic 50s is a great place. You can sit in the car with the windows up, and they bring, it's kind of a Sonic if you're not from Norman. And you can sit there and talk and get your food and have the heater on if it's cold or the air conditioner, you know, and you can talk. You can be hospitable in different places.
There are just different seasons of life where God has us do different things.
Anybody else? Going. Anybody else? All right, well, let's break. Thanks, guys. Is my microphone still on? Thank you. Lord, I pray that you would help us to be hospitable, God. And Lord, I just pray that you'd help us to be incredibly flexible people. And you've said that you wanted us to be like your Christ. And I just pray that we would be, Lord, that we would see what his life was like and we would model ourselves after Christ, God. And just that you would, that you'd help us have compassion, God, and that our compassion and our love for people would drive what we do in the areas of our homes and our environments for hospitality, God. just that. People would see our lives and then want to know you, God. That the whole point of everything would be to glorify you, God. And I pray that you would. And I pray that you'd give us wisdom on knowing how best to accomplish those purposes, Lord. Amen.